The Gontrepreneur Podcast is made possible by over 500 cannabis industry service providers in Gontrepreneur's Cannabis Business Index. At some point, every plant-touching brand experiences the stigma that many industries still have toward cannabis. Going strong since 2015, our business index is the most comprehensive and frequently visited directory for cannabis-friendly services on the internet, saving you the time and hassle of sifting through uninformed and unwelcoming providers. With categories for everything from business financing to extraction equipment to interior designers and public relations, you'll find every kind of specialist and business service you could ever need. Check out the Business Index today at gontrepreneur.com/businesses.
Hey there, I'm your host, TG Brandfault, and this is the gontrepreneur.com podcast, where we try to bring you actionable information and normalize cannabis through the stories of gontrepreneurs, activists, and industry stakeholders. Today, I am delighted to be joined by Jeremy Rivera. He's the co-founder and CEO of Terp Bros in Astoria, Queens, New York. Rivera is a conditional adult use retail dispensary or card license holder, and Terp Bros' mission is to serve as a locale for the unique and memorable learning and experiences. Hey, Jeremy, how are you doing this morning, man?
Not too bad, bud. What's going on?
Dude, I'm real excited. You're my first guest back. I'm happy to be talking with somebody in New York. The last time that I did this podcast, New York had gone legal, but we didn't have the rollout of the market yet. So we have a lot to talk about. Before we get into all of that, though, man, tell me about yourself. Tell me about your background, just sort of your history with cannabis and how you ended up in the card program.
The program. All right. Well, I'm one of the owners of Terp Bros Cannabis Dispensary in Astoria, New York. Obviously, because of New York's parameters to get a license, I'm justice involved. I spent a lot of my teenage years as a gang member, a Crip Street gang. Between 19 and 30, I spent most of those years in and out of prison. I have 3 state bids and a juvenile bid that I did. And when I was 30, 2018, I came home. I had made a decision that I didn't really want to continue living the life of wasting away in and out of prison. So I got into construction. I tried to maximize the space there, and I got into construction safety. I became an authorized OSHA instructor, a New York City Department of Buildings compliance officer, and a nationally certified construction health and safety technician, all of which I was denied for, and I had to appeal. I actually set precedent for people with convictions to be able to get these licenses. Wow. And I was doing that from about, 2018 when I got home. I started my own business also. And I was doing that up until about 2021, 2022, when the card program was released. And I didn't really know much about the card program, only because I had no real intention of getting back into selling drugs, you know? And some of my background with cannabis is, you know, just like everybody else who was on the streets, you know, you had some homies out in California, Oklahoma, Oregon, they'd send you 10 packs, 15 packs, and, you know, you distribute them throughout New York and with whatever your circle was. So I was dibbling, dabbling in cannabis and even in prison, you know, like one of the big smokers is weed, you know, you get somebody to bring you up the bag, you're smoking a joint in the yard, it becomes a thing. So that's really my experience, just to go back and tell you what my experience in cannabis is. But again, in 2022, when the card program was coming out, my best friend actually came to my house and he's like, yo, homie, I was just watching the news, you know, like we're going to get a weed dispensary. And I genuinely thought he was crazy, bro. Like, I'm like, there's no way that New York, out of every state in the country, is going to give convicted felons. You know, people have been convicted of crimes, nonviolent drug crimes.
I mean, we have a history of Rockefeller drug laws.
Of course. You know, with the early 90s into the mids in the 2000s, you know, with stop and frisk all the way into the 2000s and as early as the Rockefeller in the 90s, there's no way New York State was going to allow such a thing to happen. But as I dove a little more into it and started researching it, you know, they had 2 main criterias. You had to be convicted of a cannabis crime, and you had to have a small business positive for 2 years. And I have 3 state felonies and a juvenile conviction. Each one of my state prison bids had cannabis in the indictment. So like I checked that box off the jump, you know? And I, like I said, when I came home, I made the conscious decision to change my life. So around 2019-20, I started J&A Building Consultants, which was a consulting firm that I worked with insurance companies, and I audited job sites. So that checked that box off. Boom. We got with a good lawyer, Wei Hu from MRTA Law, and like we just started rocking and rolling. I really like developed abilities that I didn't know I had, even this, to be able to talk on podcasts and really tell the story. So it was like, it was amazing. It was a really cool journey, and really journey's just beginning.
So the licensing process was marred by lawsuits. Yeah. There was, you know, at least one that stopped it, and then another one that stopped it that dealt with veterans. And, you know, I can tell you from experience, I was in very shortly after legalization, I was in New York City, and, you know, there were illegal dispensaries operating, you know, sort of everywhere. And I know that had you had taken that route, you wouldn't have gotten a license ultimately. So the patience really paid off for a lot of people. Can you tell me about your experience obtaining a license in the state? What was it like for you?
So you said it right there. The state's program was hiccuped from the beginning. You know, we had the Veracyte lawsuit, which held five regions in injunction. We had the Fiore lawsuit, which Cos Marte and Con Bud and myself were a part of. We filed as interveners on that case. And we were one of the three dispensaries that set the precedent for what the Honorable Judge Bryant was opening dispensaries for. But you said it, man, like between the illicit dispensaries, we could have gone that route. And you know what? There are some illicit dispensaries that have gone that route and are still getting open, you know, so that's always like, fuck. it's been a hairy rollout. The card program itself, you know, we've never codified card. So the card program isn't in the MRTA, the Marijuana Revenue Tax Act. It's not in the MRTA. So it's its sole independent entity. So that's why it's so subjective to having these lawsuits brought against them. We started this out with like a wish and a dream, you know, and when they started awarding licenses back in November of 2023, I believe it was. No, 2024, sorry. Oh, my apologies, 2022. We didn't get approved till 2023. So I left my job, you know, I left working and doing my businesses to pursue this full time. And like,
did you have to rent a building like in the meantime, just waiting for it?
So no, because originally the parameters were different, right? Originally we had to take the DASNY program, the Dormitory Authority Services of New York. It was supposed to be like a turnkey operation in the beginning, right? Yeah. They were supposed to fit us out with a dispensary, find the location. We do the branding together because a lot of us in CARD didn't have that experience in a mature market. We were individuals that were stepping into this. So the state had originally created a program through DASNY where they were going to assist us, find the location, work with fit out groups and all that. And as time progressed, everything changed. There were only supposed to be 150 licensees, ended up now being 475 people or whatnot were licensed. We were originally supposed to work with the Dormitory Authority Services, and now people like myself were able to get their own locations. So this program, you know, and not to the fault of, you know, anyone specifically, it's just been a very difficult and ever-changing landscape.
Now, I obviously, you know, when people in the industry in New York, when we talk about this, you know, I hear a lot that, you know, they don't like those provisions that are in, you know, in the card provisions. Yeah. And that they say is what handicapped the rollout essentially. And, you know, what's your take on those provisions, you know, with it doesn't seem like in New York City with the Dormitory Authority, it really worked out that way. And it doesn't seem like now that there's, you know, four times as many licenses as they had anticipated, it didn't really work out that way. So what do you think about the provisions and how it has rolled out?
I think there should have been more protection for the card program. I think it should have been codified by our elected officials a lot earlier on and now still codified to give protection to these individuals. New York has continued the rollout, though. They've continued to accept applications and give out licenses. So the program is not stopping. The cannabis adult use program is not stopping. Bacard seems like to be forgotten about and continuously being forgotten about. And again, it's no ill intent to anyone specifically. I think it's just the way the cards rolled out. You know, we have to give credit to New York for, and the officials that were behind the original MRTA, for creating a program that focused on people who were disproportionately affected by the war on drugs. But the truth of the matter is,
in New York City, I mean, that's
Ground zero. Know, I come from a CDI, a community disproportionately impacted by cannabis. I have multiple cannabis convictions. I, again, as a former gang member and a person who was in and out of prison and was in the streets, like, we've all been affected. Cannabis was that one reason to get you pulled out of a car and searched in hopes that they would be able to find something else. So we have to appreciate the individuals that focused on this and wanted to give us a chance. But the reality is, as we all know, in other states, the big corporations really don't give two fucks, excuse my language, about individuals like us. And they have the finance and resources to keep on either pausing programs or filing lawsuits that pause programs to, honestly, it's like to break morale in individuals. And a lot of people who were in CARD, you know, were hoping to get a build out. They didn't have the finances or the resources to open up their own dispensary. So a lot of people who initially applied were only applying in hopes that they would be able to get that chance. So it's a little difficult. You know, it's a rough program. It's had its rough up and downs.
Let me ask you another question. Just do you know if I know that Hochul, shortly after she took office, pardoned a whole lot of cannabis convictions. Are you a person that's included in that sort of social justice?
No, I wasn't. I'm not familiar with the pardons that she did do, but I'm a 3-time predicate persistent drug offender. So I can only get what's called a certificate of relief. I've actually been home this year, 6 years that I'm home from prison. Wow. Last year, 5 years was the longest I ever been home in my life.
Unbelievable story, man.
Yeah. So this year I'm actually able to put in for what they call a certificate of relief, and it doesn't expunge my record because I have so much on top of it, but it puts like a little asterisk next to it. And, it just lets the officials know, if everybody looks at my record, that, you know, I'm kind of reformed. Well, I am reformed, you know?
So going back to the community that your shop's in, I'm a guy who likes buildings. Can you tell me about the building itself that you're in, maybe what it used to be, what you've...
So it's a funny story. We're in North Astoria, Queens, Ditmars. So we're across the street from a real famous Greek seafood restaurant. We're also across the street from a real famous bakery called Martha's.
Good place for a dispensary.
Yeah, exactly. Great place. Yeah. So we originally, we were working with one of my partner's friends, Danielle from Fresh Spaces. She's young like us, in her 30s, you know, was in the club scene early on. And then as she grew up and had her family, she developed into doing real estate. And we hired her to find us locations. And she gave us a list of 10. And out of that 10, we picked like 4 or 5 we wanted to see. And this specific location wasn't even on the list. We never picked it. Check it out. So we go look at the other spots and we're finishing. She's like, hey, I want to show you the place on 36th and Ditmars. You didn't pick it, but I want to show it to you. So we go over and we look around and I'm like, yo, this is the spot. The problem is the landlord, older gentleman, he's about 65. His father had owned the building since the 30s and was a Greek woods craftsman. So they had it as a cabinet place. Like, they used to make handmade cabinets. This is the first time he was ever interested in renting it out to somebody that wasn't in his family. So, bro, when I tell you we had to jump through hoops and have to deal with this guy while we were building out, we had the construction crews in here. He was standing here like a foreman. And he would stand here and be like, well, you know, you have to change this and you have to change that. And it was crazy to the point we were like, Nick, you got to go to Florida. You had a house in Florida. Like, yo, Nick, you have to go down to Florida. But it's a first floor storefront with apartments upstairs. And again, Astoria is very residential with small businesses. So all of the small businesses have residential attached to them. So like my neighbors, they're like, oh, we live downstairs from a dispensary, you know, and like, It's really cool. My neighbor next to us is a bar. The neighbor to the other side of us is a brick oven Italian pizzeria. So, bro, it's really cool. There's not much like architectural substance to the building, but there's so much emotional substance to it, you know? But
well, I mean, like, I saw pictures of it. It's got that dope awning on the front of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's got character.
Yeah, we when we did the design, you know, it was actually my partner who came up with the whole design. We did two murals, one from a local Astoria artist and another from a, another from a Colorado and Hawaii based artist. So even our construction, we did it small business from a guy in the neighborhood. Our floors, we did small business. Everything in the dispensary, we outsourced to people in the community.
It's the way to do it, man. It really, you know, it brings in, you know, a dollar spent, you know, locally or earned locally, two are spent locally. I don't know how the phrase goes.
I know it's so, something
something like that. The prior to licensing, like I kind of mentioned earlier, you know, New York was a hotspot for unlicensed dispensaries. Are they still proliferating? I mean, you had said earlier that they're still out there. And how are licensed operators competing?
So we'll start with the first part, right? Are they still proliferating and continuing to open up? And the truth is yes.
Okay.
Just within maybe 500 feet of me, I have about five or six of them. So an average of about one for every 100 feet. New York State didn't create a program where there was a real ability to shut these stores down. Even the other day in the news, we saw on the Upper West Side, an elected official had gone and shut a illegal dispensary down and decided the next day to do a press conference in front of the padlocked dispensary, right? Illegal. And much to her amaze, when she got there, they were open again and
oh, come on.
Operation. They had clipped the lock, opened it up, and they were back in business, right? Okay. So it just goes to show you what the temperament in New York City is. It's like, fuck you, you know, we're going to do what we want. How do we differentiate and how do we work? Is providing education and understanding of what legal cannabis brings health-wise. I know we have to separate ourselves. Because we're not medical, you know, we're not medical dispensaries, you know, but we always have to make sure that we're understanding, these illegal dispensaries are definitely being found with laced cannabis. There's definitely fentanyl, cocaine, heroin, you know, being distributed sometimes out of these same places.
Really?
It's crazy. Just the other day there was a raid and they found traces of fentanyl in the cannabis. The NYPD, you know, released a statement. So what can we do is market as safe legal providers. You know, we have to get into our communities and show them that we have reasonably priced product, good product, safe product that we can give them. You know, like it's always just the education part of it. These illegal dispensaries aren't going out and telling you what the fuck's in the weed. They're just selling it to you.
I mean, I hadn't heard that from New York City at all. So that's super disconcerting at the very least.
Yeah.
Now, broader, aside from the sort of illegal operators that you have to sort of compete with, New York City itself, I'm sure, is going to be hyper competitive, just like it is for any business that decides to open in the city. Do you take the same approach when trying to corner, you know, your part of that hyper competitive sort of broader New York City market?
Of course, because eventually I don't believe that the illegal dispensary is going to be here for much longer. Within the next couple of years and as the program develops, I think the state will create a protocol in which they're shutting them down. It's just not happening fast enough. But when it does happen, you know, there are going to be a lot more legal dispensaries. And just like anything else is marketing, right? And creating something that other dispensaries don't have, which is your own personal vibe, your own personal feeling that you give the consumers when they walk in. You know, like we're We don't have a bunch of screens. We have bud tenders that walk the floor. We talk to you. We introduce. A lot of our returning customers know our bud tenders by name. We know our customers by first and last name. You know, so it's
just giving, like, you knew your boy back in the day.
No, exactly. We're bringing back that feeling of cannabis. We don't want to over commercialize it where it feels like you're going to an Apple store, or you're going to some big corporate building. You know, we want to normalize the fact of purchasing cannabis in your neighborhood from somebody you recognize and you feel, you know, like, you know. So that's going to continue to be our game plan as more dispensaries open up, is being Terpros, right? Giving back what people feel is the reason they come in, and it's comfortability and the coolness, you know?
Well, and on marketing too, New York has really strict marketing regulations. You know, I have a small business, a record store, and I wanted to partner, it just so happens Record Store Day is on 420, and I wanted to partner with our local dispensary on something. And he's like, dude, I can't do it. You know, I can't do that type of partnership advertising. So how are you doing marketing and advertising in a space where it's not allowed?
Well, it's not that it's not allowed. It's very strict. And there's very strict guidelines on how to market, right? We have to make sure that 90% of our viewers are 21 and older. We can't use certain colors or certain fonts. We can't insinuate the use of cannabis, I believe. We can't use brands, right? We can't have brands market with us because there's no, you know, picking one over the other.
You can't trademark your name.
Well, you can trade. You see, again, there's ways to do certain things. We're in the process of trademarking Terpros, you know, not through cannabis, but as merchandising, because we sell hats, we sell shirts.
Yeah.
There are ways to go about it, even with marketing, programmatic, out of home, search engine optimization. There's ways to do it organically. And there are companies out there that are marketing that want to break into the cannabis space, knowing that eventually this is either going to go to Schedule 3 or be descheduled completely, and we're going to be playing on the same field. So there are companies out there. It takes a lot of work and a lot of diligence to do your homework on what is legal and not legal, what's in and not in the regulations, so that you can go to your marketing meetings and you can explain, and or your marketing company can explain back to you if you don't fully understand. This is what it says, right? Regulations are like law. And when I was going in and out of prison fighting cases, you cite case law. And if it isn't exactly the way it is, that's what causes, you know, mistrials. And that's what gets you, like, it's exact, you know, regulations are exact. So you have to be able to use those regulations and get as far as you can without violating them. And there are ways to do it. You know, even with your record store, it's not him marketing, it's you marketing. There's no regulations that says a record store can't market for 420. You know, like, it's a cannabis company that can. It's the legal dispensary. And
it just seems ridiculous on its face.
It is. I mean, super ridiculous. And we hope eventually that it's going to open up. But for now, if we want to stay in this competitive market, we have to learn how to play the words, right? We have to learn how to work it.
How hands-on are you day-to-day? Because you seem pretty, like, you know, you're
just like any other small business owner. I'm here. Me and my partners are here. We have 14 shifts a week, right? One morning, one night. We're open 7 days a week. And between myself and my other partners, we're here every day. I'm here Monday through Friday from, you know, morning till evening. We are hands-on in all of our marketing meetings, all of our growth and expansion, all of our day-to-day team meetings. But you have to be if you want to be a successful small business. I can't expect anyone else, especially only 5 months into an industry, to care about this as much as I do, knowing how much I've already lost. This is more than just a business. This is like reparations for so much pain that individuals like myself have been through. You know, like having to be stopped and searched and ripped out of car, having to go to prison with cannabis on your indictment and living through these traumatic instances. Like, this is reparations for cannabis users. And we have to treat it in a respectful manner. This is a real business. This is a real industry. So, bro, I'm here every day. Like, you know, no questions asked. I'm at the shop right now.
When it goes to marketing too, I just want to ask about your name, because Terp Bros, right? Terpenes are not something that's often an experienced cannabis consumer might understand. right? So you have like, weed shop on, 100 feet down from you. And then you have this, really unique name that I think speaks to sort of the maturity of your business. So what's in a name, man?
So this was actually my partner who came up with the name. We originally opened the company under Kush Culture Industry because, again, we thought we needed, we thought it was going to be a Dazney and we wanted to go with something like conservative. And as the program evolved, we had created an Instagram page where Terp Rose was the name. My partner came up with that name. And it's funny you say that, like a mature consumer may know what terpenes is and maybe not the immature consumer, but everybody understands once you explain to them what terps are and what terpenes are. Because it's the first thing that every consumer does when they check weed. They look at it, they open it, and they smell it.
Yeah.
So it goes back to the educational purposes of what we're trying to create here and opening up things that, again, the natural consumer may not know but wants to because they do it on a regular habit basis. And then as, again, time went on, we DBA'd Terp Rose. And we're like, that's who we are. This is, this is the feel. And it's cool that you picked up on it. And I feel you, not every consumer picks up on it and not every person does.
I'm a Terps guy, man.
I feel you. But once you explain it to them, they understand. And again, that adds on to the educational purpose that we're trying to provide here. It's like teaching somebody something new every day.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you have people. Do you have people who come in and say, what the fuck is a Terp?
Absolutely. I had somebody tell me, because I'm not really a sports fan. But I had somebody ask me if it's like a college football team.
It's Maryland,
something. Yeah. Yeah, Maryland, like the Terps. Like, bro.
No, I'll be watching ESPN and they'll be like, and the Terps. And I'm like, the fuck? The what? What are we doing here? So what is the top selling category at your shop? Is it flower, concentrates, edibles, flour?
Flour, hands down, flour. We're a flower shop. We have a great array of eights from 25 all the way up to 60. We have something for everybody. We are a small shop, but we hold a lot of SKUs. And I know a lot of people who are going to watch this from the mature market is like, you're supposed to have 250 and 300, but we have like 580 SKUs. We have a lot of flower. We have a lot of non-cannabis too. We have Puffco, we have Grav Bongs, we have papers and shit. But we have, I'd say about, right now, maybe 90 different SKUs of just flower.
Wow.
Right? We'd like to give people an option. That's between eighths, quarters, half ounces, ounces, But we like to give every consumer a chance to purchase something that's for them. I don't think having limited quantities really helps people. I think people need a good choice, and especially if you have good bud tenders that are guiding them to find exactly what it is they're looking for, you can definitely dial down at Terp Rose and find something for everybody.
What do you look for in a bud tender?
So we picked our bud tenders from the community, also from the cannabis New York City community. We want to have people that are I wouldn't want to say connoisseurs, but understand cannabis, understand terpenes, understand the difference between flowers, understand the endocannabinoid systems and secondary cannabinoids, right? Not just THC, so that they're able to give the consumers a good piece for what they're looking for, but also personable, right? We want a bud tender that has retail experience, that knows how to sell, but can smile and has a good aura about them. One thing about all of our staff is we're trying to create the next line of entrepreneurs in the business. So we want bud tenders that have goals. We want bud tenders that want to be owners of dispensaries or owners of cultivation or get into marketing or get into compliance or, anything like that. We want to be building the next set of business owners in the industry. So it's like, a little bit of everything, you know, cannabis, you're a good flow person. You got a good vibration, you smile, you know how to upsell, you know how to sell, you want to be something, you have goals in your life, and if Terp Rose is the place for you, there's so many people that come in and out of these doors that there's a chance for you to fulfill your dreams by working in this store for your future.
And do you look for people that may have, maybe records themselves? And
All of our, yeah, that I didn't add that on, but all of our budtenders either have a conviction or if not have a conviction, have been in a CDI, community disproportionately impacted, or come from a CDI. You know, I got budtenders in fulfillment from Brownsville all the way to the South Bronx, some from Williamsburg. You know, I got people from everywhere.
Williamsburg's a little gentrified now, isn't it?
Yeah, now it's gentrified. It sucks. I feel like, yeah, no. They're still like the South Side still got some hood blocks to it.
I want to go back to Flower just for a second though. Why do you think Flower's still it? You know, like, I mean, I was just talking about my buddy about this right before we caught on, and I was like, man, I still get Flower from like my boy, you know, but meter dose edibles, concentrates, I mean, all that comes from the dispensary, right?
Yeah.
You know, so and I think that's because of the age, right? You know, I still got boys. But why do you think Flower is still that number one seller?
I think what it is when you look at the evolution of the illegal dispensaries, they put out of business our boys who had the delivery routes, right? They put out of business those local dealers who you would call, I'll be at your house in 45 minutes with two bags, you know? They put that area out of business. But again, as cannabis evolved in New York, they started to see that these corner stores were not giving them product that was suitable for their health or suitable for consumption. So now people are driven to what they're used to, which is a store type environment, but they'll rather go legal. And especially in a small community like this, where it's not a lot of like tourist traffic. It's not a Manhattan where a customer will come in once and you'll never see them in their whole life. They're just buying a vape pen and they're walking through Manhattan and seeing, you know, sightseeing and smoking a vape. These people are buying a bag of weed. They're going to their house, packing a bowl or rolling a joint. You know, they're buying a pre-roll, going next door to the bar and smoking a joint outside. So like, again, the illegal dispensaries put out of business our homeboys who are having, you know, like the routes.
Yeah.
But now that these illegal dispensaries, the cloth is coming over and we're really seeing what they're doing, it's driving the consumer back to legal dispensaries.
It's super interesting just from a, now, does it sort of deviate by age group for you? You know, are the younger kids sort of looking for one thing and then grandma's looking for another thing?
Absolutely. We have a common core demographic of 37 to 41, you know, that's male and female. We're starting to see that 21 to 28 start to pick up now that new brands are coming to market and those more recognizable brands that have that, you know, that marketing and that young feel about them.
That are on TikTok.
21 to 20. Yeah. It's not even the TikTok, but they're the ones that were like the 710s and the cookies and all these brands are starting to come. Bodega Boys is going to come to New York. They have brand recognition. The older demographic is looking, honestly, it's like sleep products, right? They're looking for edibles that put them to sleep. They're looking for flower that puts them to sleep. So the market is ever developing. And I think the whole demographics of who your consumer is today by 3-4 months is going to change because all these new brands are now dropping to the New York market.
What surprised you most about sort of the legal market or going legal yourself?
How much bullshit comes along with it?
That surprises you? You're talking New York bureaucracy in New York State, bud.
Bro, the taxes, you know, 280E, I believe it's 471, like all these tax codes. The marketing regulations, you know, understanding the independent regulations just for New York State, and then understanding cannabis is still federally illegal.
And the city's got their own codes.
And then the city has its own code, you know. That's really what took me for the biggest loop. It's that it's so controlled, right? That it's you're part of what's going to be the largest infrastructure in New York State. It's going to bring some of the most money in every infrastructure than any other infrastructure, but yet we're so regulated, so heavily regulated, and we can't do anything, right? We were just with our accountant, and it's like you start to add up the amount of taxes, and you're like 13 and 7 plus 8, and it's, you know, and then we filed as a C Corp, which what most common dispensaries are. You get taxed on your personal, you get taxed on your dividend, you get taxed on everything. You know, so that was the most difficult process.
Do you think that recently proposed legislation that would get rid of the potency tax, do you think that that would help, the dispensaries and the smaller operators?
Well, it depends. Because if you get rid of the potency tax on one end, it still has to be placed on another end. They're not just going to lose taxes.
No, I think they were going to put a flat tax on wholesale.
But what would be the flat tax? You get from 13% to what, 23%? Because you want to be lower than any of the other legal East Coast states are. I think the highest we are in maybe Mass is 24, 26%. So what would Hochul want to do? Give us a flat rate of 23? You know, we're at 13% now. We still have a 13% MRTA tax that we give our consumer, right? Our customer gets a 13% tax. So I think it's not going to drive consumers to want to shop. It's already hard enough paying 13% tax. Imagine giving a flat rate of 21, 23, 20, whatever it is, you know? I think on the dispensaries end, it's going to drive a lot of consumers into not wanting to buy legal.
Is it? What do you think would be best to, you know, get some sort of normalcy going in this market? Get some, you know, it, just because of the illegal operators. I mean, there's a lot of issues in New York's market. Like, do you think there's any sort of panacea or legislation or anything that would benefit
on the largest? You know, descheduling, right? Removal.
So federal reform.
Federal reform, of course, right? On interstate commerce. Right. Interstate compact. Seeing if we can start shipping from state to state. California is in a rut. If New York is the next hot market and there's already brands in California that are dying that have notoriety, why can't we start shipping them from California to New York?
I mean, Connecticut has supply.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that, of course. Right. That interstate movement would help a lot of these East Coast states not only drive traffic, but also relieve the issues that the West Coast states are having. So there's so much that we can do, you know, it's just, I guess, not lining the pockets the way people want it to on the big end. So they're not with it, really.
So what advice do you have for entrepreneurs looking to enter this space?
Educate yourself on the history of legalization in cannabis in other states and in your state, the regulations and the market itself. Understand that the whole facade of you driving a Ferrari and you own a dispensary really isn't true, right? If you talk to anybody who's been in mature markets and understands how the cannabis industry truly is, knows you're going to have to be like me, like working here every day. Me and my partners are here every day, blood, sweat, and tears. It's not easy. It's heavily regulated, you know, gets back into understanding the regulations of your specific state and city. And educating yourself, like just learning your consumer, learning sales, learning business, learning retail, being a good people's person. There's a lot that has to do with being successful in this industry. It's not just one thing.
And just to ask you, man, like what drives you to, you know, sort of be in there 5 days a week, like of this industry, like of what you do, like what's the passion?
I told you I'm a 3-time predicate persistent drug offender, bro. Like I dropped out of high school in like 9th grade. You know, I have no formal education. I left construction safety to do this. I'm not going back to construction, right? So this is all I have. This is everything, all eggs in the basket. This is what we're doing. You know, I'm that type of intense person, you know, like I don't have a college degree where if this fails, I can go back to an office or I'm going to go do something. I don't play basketball. I don't rap. I don't play sports. I don't play football. I don't do none of that shit. You know, like this is all I have. And because of that, and because I have a family that I need to support, I have a wife and beautiful children. I have a dream and a goal. You know, like this is what it is. This is what my focus is. And again, goes back to your earlier question before this. You need to focus on that. Like you need to focus in cannabis if you want to be successful the way I am. Because if you're not focused and you're not giving this 100%, you're not going to get 100% out of it. You know, so you have to be like laser vision all day, every day. I saturate myself in legal cannabis. You know, like it's... I'm all in on this.
Bleeding it, man. He's fucking bleeding it.
That's a fact.
My man, I cannot wait to my next trip down to the city to come and visit you and meet you and buy some flower. Where can people find out more about you and Terp Bros on the old internet?
So you can go to our website, www.terpbrosnyc.com. So that's terpbrosnyc.com. You can also find us on Instagram, terpbros.astoria, A-S-T-O-R-I-A. You got to type the whole thing out because we're shadow banned. So if you type in, just type, you got to like literally type the whole thing because, you know, cannabis is so heavily regulated and marketing is so difficult that Meta doesn't allow us to have cannabis brands on their platform. So, but we're also located at 36-10 Ditmars Boulevard in Astoria, New York. So that's Ditmars Boulevard between 36th and 37th. That's where you find us at.
Well, man, I really appreciate you coming on the show for my return after a couple of years away.
Thanks, bro.
Jeremy Rivera is the co-founder and CEO of Terp Bros in Astoria, Queens. And this has been the Gontrepreneur.com podcast. You can find more episodes of the podcast in the podcast section at Gontrepreneur.com, wherever you get your podcasts. On the website, you'll find the latest cannabis news and cannabis jobs updated daily, along with transcripts of this podcast. You can also download the Gontrepreneur.com app in iTunes and Google Play. This episode was engineered by Wayward Media. I've been your host, TG Brandfault.